From Salesforce Studios, this is Blazing Trails. Welcome back to Blazing Trails. I'm Michael Revo with Salesforce Studios. On today's episode, we take a moment to honor the LGBTQ plus community. This week, we hear an inspiring conversation between a Salesforce leader, an Olympic champion, and a Grammy-nominated artist about the meaning of pride and why this movement and others matter so much. Lee McGowan-Hare, Salesforce's Vice President of Trailblazer Community and Trailhead Evangelism, is joined by soccer star Megan Rapinoe and singer-songwriter, actor, and producer Janelle Monáe. Together, they discuss how to champion positive social change for all, and in particular, how to turn your intentions into action and use your platform, no matter what it is, to lift others up. And now, I'll hand it off to our host, Leah.
Let's go back to 1969. Over 50 years ago, the Stonewall Riots. In the early hours of June 28, New York City police raided a gay club in Greenwich Village called the Stonewall Inn, hauling patrons and employees out of the bar. But the LGBTQ community was not having it. Two trans women of color, Marsha Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, led protests against abuse by police. This uprising sparked a movement. That movement became Pride. A movement for equality. A movement against police abuse. A movement that resonates more than ever today. Good morning, I'm Leah McGowan-Hare, and welcome to another one of our live weekly conversations as part of our Leading Through Change series. And this one happens to fall on the same day of a very big ruling from the Supreme Court in favor of the LGBTQ rights. Yes, and we'll be discussing that later with our guests. Here in San Francisco, the 50th anniversary of Pride Parade was set for this month, but it was canceled due to COVID-19, as were most global Pride celebrations. But equality is one of our core values here at Salesforce. It's central to everything we do, and that's why we're dedicating today's show to honoring Pride and the entire LGBTQ plus community with a special episode on equality, inclusion, and standing up and speaking out for what you believe in. Megan Rapinoe and Janelle Monáe certainly know a lot about speaking out for what you believe in and using your platform to drive the change that you want to see. Megan is a World Cup champion, an Olympic champion, a hero to my daughter's best friend. She spent last summer on all of our TV screens and the covers of magazines as she led the U.S. women's soccer team to a victory in France. But not only is she one of the world's best athletes, she's an outspoken activist for equal pay and for the LGBTQ plus community. Janelle, she is amazing and a Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, actor, and producer. She identifies as queer and has been a real leader in the LGBTQ plus community. And both Janelle and Megan have long been vocal in fighting racial injustices, an issue that is definitely on top of our minds today. Now, with that, it is my honor to bring to you Megan and Janelle. Thank you so much for coming to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
This is amazing. I want to start exactly with that. The news from this morning, the Supreme Court ruled that the Civil Rights Act of 1964, you know, protects LGBTQ employees from workplace discrimination. This is a massive, massive ruling, and it's pretty hard to overstate the significance here. Would love to hear your thoughts on this.
That's exactly what they should be doing.
Yes.
We're talking about human beings. We're not talking about objects, inanimate objects. We're not talking about anything other than life and being able to live in peace, in love, in freedom, and not have to worry about being discriminated against because of who you are. It's upsetting, you know, that it even had to be a ruling around human life and health and well-being and security in your jobs and finances. So a part of me is really excited, you know, that they made the right decision. But let's talk about why that even had to be up. Why this administration thought that it was okay to push, you know, an agenda that discriminates against, you know, the LGBTQIA plus community. We need to talk about that, and we need to abolish that system that even led us to having this moment.
Megan.
Yeah, I feel the same. Just to echo, like, we're not some abstract idea. We're the person in the workplace who does whatever job and who could be fired just because they're gay or lesbian or trans or whatever it is. Like, we're not some idea. We're people. We're human beings. We're in your workplace. We're your family. Everything and everyone and everything that you are. So, I mean, I agree with Janelle. It's like, I mean, good job, I guess. But like, you're not getting a ton of congratulations from here for just simply doing the right thing and for reversing this. I mean, I think my feelings on the Trump administration are pretty clear at this point, but I think this is just yet another example of the othering of people. And, you know, if you're like white, male, old and rich, I guess like you got all your rights, but for the rest of us, they try to strip those every day. Not only in sense of policy or laws, but the way that the administration speaks, the way they speak about people, the way they treat people. We've seen this with the protests and everything that's come from that. So I feel like it's a good step forward, obviously, and it's a good thing that it happened. But yeah, why are we living in a system and in a society that thinks it's even okay to think this, much less put this into law? So it is a big day and it's a big win, and we'll continue to make progress. But just for everybody to know, we're not some abstract idea. Like, I'm you. So just whatever you would want for yourself, that's what I want for myself as well.
Absolutely. Just bringing back the humanity. We are all human in this space. So, you know, give us the same love and respect as you would anyone. Absolutely. Janelle, we've seen the topic of racial injustice come to the forefront after the tragic murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery. And when all this went down, you tweeted, "I'm tired of talk, we need action." And as a matter of fact, before you agreed to do this show, you wanted to make sure Salesforce was taking action. You held us accountable. You used your platform to make sure we were taking those actions. And for that, I honestly thank you. And how would you encourage people to work towards ending racial injustice and using their platform, as you did, to make change, no matter how big or small?
Well, you know, I'm a part of the human fabric, humanity. And when I'm speaking, I'm not speaking from an artist's perspective. I'm speaking from a young, Black, queer person who grew up in the middle of Kansas to working class, Baptist family folks. And when I look at all of those names you mentioned, who we lost at the hands of police, of murderers in the police force, I'm speaking as that person who has to figure out how we're going to go to the funeral of our brother and our sister. I've lost people in my family at the hands of the police. And I think at this point, tweeting and talking and hashtagging, that's not enough for me. And also, I'm tired of us as Black people talking about this. You've heard our voices. You see us out there marching. You see my people out there marching. You see the LGBTQIA plus communities out there marching on behalf of police brutality, murderers in the police force who have killed innocent people, unarmed people. And I'm for the lack of better words, angry, upset, all of those things. And I just want to say thank you to everyone out there on the front lines who are marching, who are risking not only their lives in addition to their health, because we're still dealing with COVID-19. You know, I just want to say thank you to those who are out there on the front lines who are marching. On the other hand, this is a moment for white people to stand up and to show up for us. And I have been hopeful as I've seen the amount of white folks out there putting their bodies in front of Black bodies as we protest, because we know that police are not are not as quick to put white people in jail when they're out there protesting. They're not going to be shot as quickly as, you know, black folks who are out there protesting peacefully. And I just think this is a moment to think about why. Why are we in this situation? Why are we marching for black lives? Why are we treating black lives, again, like objects, like some abstract idea, in the words of Megan? Like, why are we doing this? And how did we get in this situation? So this is a moment to talk, white people, to talk to families about racial profiling, about the system of white supremacy that their ancestors started, about the systems of systemic racism that have all played a part into how we're here right now, talking about Black lives and the values of Black lives. We need to have those conversations, and that's what I am looking forward to hearing more of. Why? Why are we having to protest over Black lives? Why are we screaming Black Lives Matter? Matters. Who started the power dynamics, or who started this oppression, and how can you end it?
Megan, you've been vocal about systemic racism for years. And as an ally, what has it meant for you over these last weeks?
I mean, it's been, I think like Janelle said, it's been encouraging just to see how many people are out in the streets, how many more people I think are, frankly, not saying all lives matter. Like, they actually know that they can't say that anymore. So we're making some progress forward. You know, what was so, you know, disheartening and sad, honestly, when, you know, back in 2016, when Colin kneeled and I kneeled alongside him, was how many people actually, whether they were saying this or not, how many people actually just didn't believe black people? Because it's like, if you're saying all lives matter, if you're saying it's about the flag, if you're saying this, what you really are saying is like, I don't believe the collective voice of black people. Because if you believe what Colin is saying, you don't go then and say about the flag. You don't go then and say about all lives matter. You don't say that. You sit back and you listen. And so I feel like this time I'm so much more encouraged because people, I think, are listening. They're now like, oh, okay, I get what Colin was saying. I get what Black Lives Matter means, and I'm hearing what black people are saying. And so I feel like this is a white problem. You can't expect the oppressed to be the ones dismantling the whole system of oppression. Obviously, the system is far and wide. It's from the moment that we, you know, kidnapped people and brought them here and put them into chattel slavery until now. We have mass incarceration, over policing in black and brown communities, you know, the killing of black people in this country. So I feel like people are getting it a little bit more. And I just encourage white people, first of all, don't wallow in your own, like, oh my God, I'm white, this is like crazy. Like, don't tell anyone this is crazy. That just means you haven't thought about it until now. Keep that to yourself. Like, yeah, honestly, keep it. And then just like read some articles, like, you know, follow the black leaders on Twitter. Like, it's not a surprise that, you know, defund the police is trending now. Like, Black Lives Matter has been setting the groundwork for that for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, honestly, their whole life. So follow the leaders. There's plenty of information out there. Sit back, reflect, be willing to change. Understand that you may not have created the system, but you do benefit from it. And so it now is your responsibility to dismantle it and to root out racism in the country. Don't be overwhelmed. Listen, no, not one person could ever do enough, and not one person is ever going to fix it all, but everybody has something to do. And so just focus on that. Don't worry about everything you can't do. Just keep focusing on the things that you can, believing black people, listening to black people, and working to see your own whiteness and privilege in that to dismantle the system of systemic racism.
And I think so much goodness in what you both are just saying is that it's such an opening right now for space for education, because people are seeming to want to be open and they want to understand and they want to do something. And a lot of times these conversations have been all throughout the walls at my job as well. I'm like, start with educating yourself. start with learning. How do you fight systemic racism if you don't know what it is? You've got to learn about what it is and know what you're fighting for. So education is just so huge right now in understanding this problem. So thank you for sharing that. And you did hit on something. You were one of the first white athletes to kneel with Kaepernick. And just last week, the U.S. Soccer reversed their policy that players were not allowed to kneel for the national anthem. How did that make you feel?
I mean, I'm happy that they obviously reversed the policy. I thought actually the language in the statement was pretty strong. I think the admission of guilt in saying that it was wrong at the time, it's wrong now. We understand that we didn't listen to Colin. We didn't listen to Black people. We didn't listen, period. And they haven't done enough, I think, was really important. That's like the first step in a million steps. So you're not going to get tons of congratulations for me, because quite frankly, I thought the position from the jump was just, and will always be, a huge stain, whether that be for U.S. soccer or people who opposed it, or the NFL or whatever. But it's a really good first step. And I now look forward to holding their feet to the fire and seeing what we can do at the federation at that sort of level, to root out racism and to, you know, hopefully make it a more equitable place for all the people who they represent, which is literally all of America.
Awesome. And when you did cross into the lane of racial injustice, there is this crossing into intersectionality that all of these fights, the, you know, LGBTQ plus IA, you know, equal pay, racial injustice, there's a huge intersectionality. How did you see that to come? Like, a lot of people were like, I'm staying in my lane, I'm fighting for this or I'm fighting for that. But truthfully, if one person's down, we're all down, right? If one suffers, we all suffered. So what made you see that and take that knee initially?
Someone told me that and explained to me and gave me the definition of the term intersectionality actually after I knelt, and it like blew my mind. And I'm like, that's it. Like, I feel like I had this sort of, you know, the experience of coming out as gay, but that was to me personally. Even like our wage discrimination fight, like, that's to me personally. And I think with Colin, before I even knew intersectionality, that's what I was thinking to myself. Like, I've looked at that flag and in some small way, not had it protect all the rights it said it was going to for me. And it said that it was going to promise to do for me as a citizen of the United States of America. So I think I sort of subconsciously realized it a little bit. But then, yeah, someone told me, my friend Jess told me about intersectionality. I was like, that's exactly it. Like, if I'm going to sit there and ask for other people to get on board with Pride and to, you know, respect me and to, you know, allow me to have my full rights and just to hear me out, even though they haven't walked a mile in my shoes, like, I don't need to walk a mile in your shoes to believe you. Right. And so that was my thing with Colin. Like, I was like, well, clearly there's irrefutable evidence this is happening in the country. So how can I play my part in trying to dismantle that system that has been detrimental to so many people for so long?
Yeah, amazing. Janelle, let's talk about Pride with this year's 50th anniversary celebration canceled here in San Francisco. And, you know, that this event started as I mentioned in the opening, with the Stonewall riots back in 1969 with Marsha Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, which led to the protests. I want to get a sense of what that event and that celebration means to you as a significant touch point every year.
Oh, it is, you know, Marsha and Sylvia are, you know, heroes and perfect examples of intersectionality and, like, you know, also feeling like so many of us now are trying to carry that torch, you know, the baton that they passed on to this next generation of folks in the community. You feel a deep sense of responsibility because of just imagine growing up in that time. You know, not only are you dealing with, you know, fighting against discrimination for, you know, for being trans, also being Black, being, you know, brown folks. And it's really, it just makes you want to fight because you don't want any of that to be in vain. You know, it started with, we wouldn't have Pride, as we all know, if they did not stand up to the police, if they didn't riot, if they didn't speak out. And I think that we're just building. You know, I'm trying to just build on, make them proud.
Megan, you grew up just a few hours north here in Reading. When did pride come into your radar? When did that become a point for you?
Not until college, to be honest. I'm not sure where I missed it. I'm from a pretty small, very conservative area. So I don't think we had pride parades going on in my town when we were growing up, but I went to school in Portland, Oregon, obviously, you know, very liberal and open to the LGBT community. So that was kind of my first experience with it. And I was just like blown away. I mean, to have this sort of celebration and like at the same time, this honoring of what has happened before and to realize how much better we have it than, you know, Marsha had it. And people during that era, it's almost like you don't want it, like Janessa, you don't want it to be in vain. It would almost be a slap in the face to not continue to celebrate and to continue to make it better for the people that come after you. I think that's a big part of it too, is like, we've been given this torch and been given this runway and they cleared it as much as they can. And now it's our responsibility to continue to clear it as much as we can and continue to move that forward and take that responsibility on yourself. There's a reason that I can walk around these streets and be out and be gay and be who I am and say it everywhere and anywhere. It wasn't always like that, even within our generation. So, and even now, I mean, some people in some areas of the country and the world can't do that.
Yeah.
And so to understand what a privilege that is, and for the people who fought for that, it's just like a celebration and an honoring of those people every single time. And to be able to do that every year. I mean, gays just have more fun too. We're just going to throw that out there. So like our parties are just better and like our people are just cool. I'm just not cooler, but you know what I'm saying. So it's just like, it's just fun. It's a celebration, but it's also like a very heartfelt, like, we fought for this, right, and we deserve this, and we're going to continue to fight for it.
Janelle, I want to talk to you about, Michelle Obama said about you, no one stands in their fullness of power quite like Janelle Monáe. That is a powerful, powerful quote. The fact that you walk in your power, that's something that many of us strive to do all our life. How did you get there? What advice would you give to people to get there? Or were you just born with like, I got the power, and you were walking in it?
No, absolutely not. You know, listen, I think walking in your power is an active choice. Like, you have to make that choice every single day, knowing your power, knowing your rights, being educated, and reading and knowing those who you admire, who you look up to, what they had to go through, honestly gives me my courage and my strength. I, as I mentioned earlier, I grew up in Kansas. I grew up, you know, my parents were working class. My mom's occupation, she was a janitor. My dad was a trash man. Like, I was a daughter of essential workers, and my grandmother as well, who pick cotton in Aberdeen, Mississippi. She was a sharecropper. And so I think growing up, you know, in a lower class community, being Black, I've been able to see both sides. Now, having been an artist, traveling around the world, being in rooms with folks, you know, that I just had never dreamt about, or that I dreamt about growing up, seeing both sides. I try whenever I can, if I'm in the room with someone who can make some decisions to better the communities of marginalized folks, I'm going to say it, and I'm going to ask, and I'm going to advocate on behalf of my people. And I think that has to do with me growing up. I grew up in a family. I have 50 first cousins. So I grew up in, yes, a built-in community, and we took care of each other. We were babysitting, we were washing dishes, and my auntie had to work. I was there watching her kids. We stayed with family. Like, I grew up with taking care of your community, and I just try to use my power to do that. Not everybody has to do that. That's not everybody's calling. I didn't know that was my calling, but as soon as I got in those places, I was like, yeah, like, I want all of my family to experience this. I want to get rid of those lines of division of, oh, if you come from this place, you can't be in this room. No, we're in this room. We're here. And we are going to have the same freedoms that you have been privileged to have. So, I'm scared most times. I also, therapy, trauma, I had to deal with a lot of that. You know, my dad was in and out of prison growing up. So I dealt with a lot of abandonment issues. And even in terms of like, you know, speaking freely about who I am and where I come from, all of those things, I had to dismantle a lot of my own, you know, trauma. And it took some time and it's still taking time, you know, but I think that we have to understand that freedom is not free. It's not free. You got to fight for it every single day. And that's what I try to do.
And it sounds like when you're saying walking in your power, it's not just about you and owning yours, but creating space so others can also walk and own their power too.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't work for me if it's just me. It's experiences, life, love, all of that is better shared with the people you love and you care about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Megan, how would you say you walk in your power and empower others around you?
I think it's a lot of what Janelle said, to be honest. First of all, it's always scary. So I'm always sweating and always like have my heart racing when I'm about to do something wild. Yeah. But I think like I sort of had this switch of like, if ever I'm about to, you know, say something to the power or to the room or to the people, whatever, like I say it with the people in mind. Like, I don't think about who I'm talking to. I think about who I'm speaking on behalf of. Yeah. And it's always so much more than the person that you're talking to. So it's like, even, you know, after the kneeling, I realized one person ever in these last 5 years has come up to me in person on the streets and said anything like, I didn't agree with what you did. One person. And that was just recently, to be honest. Every other person is like, that was cool. Or you inspired me. Or thank you for doing that. Or keep going. Or whatever it is. So like, I just feel like, I understand and feel very lucky to be in the privileged position that I am. Like, I am white. That comes with privilege. I play for the United States of America and get to wear the flag and therefore get to speak on behalf of the flag in America. That's a privilege. Like, I'm an athlete in a culture that glorifies sports. That's a privilege. And so, like you were saying, like, what's the point of having success if you're the only one that has it? When you see inequities happening, or you see racism happening, you see that gay people don't have all the rights or whatever it is. So I always feel like I try to, you know, understand and dismantle, okay, like I have the microphone right now, but I didn't just build this platform out of nowhere. Like, I didn't get to where I was last summer without Colin and without Black Lives Matter and without Tarana Burke and without all these people doing all this work. So when I get up there, I'm going to say that. The institution or the room or the person might not have wanted to invite that person. They may not want to invite Colin or the co-founders of Black Lives Matter or Tarana Burke, but it's like, so you felt more comfortable inviting me. So now I'm just going to talk about them and I'm going to say why I'm actually up here. And it's like, you know, things culminate in different voices and personalities at different times for different reasons. And I feel like I always try to kick it back to all the people that really are the reason that I'm here and sort of give that credit, because it's not mine to take. I didn't create it. I'm just, you know, have the microphone right now. And so try to do it responsibly and always speak on behalf of the people, really.
Yeah. It's sort of like because there was a campaign that just launched. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch it online, but it was called Share the Mic. And it was, you know, a lot of Black voices in the community, like Tarana Burke's Black Lives Matter, ACLU, so many amazing women, Black women and activists took over the pages of other white women who had large followings. And it's almost like sharing the mic, you know, us sharing the mic, not speaking for, but just saying, or using that moment to amplify their voices, you know, the people who do this work every single day. People have called me activists, all that, but no, there are people who are out there on the front lines day and night. They're eating, breathing, sleeping, this stuff. So it's like that. It's like, you feel, I think when you get the platform, that we have, it's like you just want to share the mic, like you want to amplify their voices in a deeper way. And only mostly artists and folks with these platforms, they can only understand that. Like it's because everybody's always asking, well, what are you wearing or what are you doing? And it's just like, that is not where our spirits are right now. That is not where our country is right now. This is not how I want to use this platform of however many millions of people are looking at us. And so I just want to say thank you to Megan for feeling that, because in the same breath, like us having this platform and feeling that responsibility, there are other people who don't and opt out, you know? And I always tip my hat and commend those who say, you know what, we're not perfect. You know, we're not going to say and get things right. But one thing is for sure is that we care about community and we care about our communities and we understand our privilege. We check it all the time. And it's going to take that real checking of privilege, real checking of how can I be a better ally? How can I show up for folks who may not have the same freedoms as I do? It's going to take us checking that over and over and over again.
Absolutely. I think what you both have hit on is like allyship. It is using that privilege. You'll hear a lot of people like, I felt crippled or really guilty about my white privilege. I'm like, it's okay. You have privilege. How are you using it? That's the question. How are you using it to help and empower others? That acknowledge your privilege. We all have privilege. The fact that I am sitting here with you two brilliant beings, privilege, right? So we all have privilege at some level, but it's how you choose to use it to make a positive impact in the world. That's what matters. So as we wrap up in the conversation, I want to think about how at this moment, we can all use a wake-up call. So what would be that one thing, what would be your one call to action you would ask the audience to do? Janelle, starting with you.
Well, I would say, and I opened it by saying this, conversations. This, if you are uncomfortable right now, if you are white, if you are privileged, and you are uncomfortable with having conversations around race, then you are on the right track. Be uncomfortable. Sit in this uncomfortability. Sit in what it means to grow, what it means to grow into being a better ally. Have these conversations around the table with your families on why we feel like we're even arguing over Black lives mattering. Talk about your ancestors. Talk about chattel slavery, talk about mass incarceration, talk about systemic racism and oppression. Talk about that. Talk about how COVID-19 disproportionately, you know, kills Black people. Talk about that. Talk about these things in your privileged circles and figure out your books, your community leaders in the Black community that you're going to follow, you're going to listen to, whose voices you pledge to amplify. Figure out how to do the real work in dismantling white supremacy, systemic racism, sexism, all of these isms. Figure out ways that you're going to work to become a better ally to dismantle these systems that continue to oppress Black people, minorities, marginalized voices. And that's what I really want. And I speak out of love. I am angry, but I'm coming with love because we all realize that it's going to take a mighty village. It's going to take citizenship over capitalism. What it really means to be a citizen, what it really means to be, to put the health and the well-being of us over capitalism, over money, over politics, how we can really show up in that way. And that's what I'm asking is to have better listeners who are more privileged, better listeners, better action-oriented folks who are really willing and ready to show up for us.
Thank you, Janelle. Megan?
Yeah, I think much of the same. First of all, something I've learned as I've gotten older, if you want it done, do it. Like, oh, we don't want racism anymore. Like, you know, with the exception of just a few people, like, you know, pretty much no one wants racism anymore, but like, do it, do the work.
Yeah.
So that's reading, that's having those hard conversations, that's educating yourself. For white people, like, you're going to be uncomfortable and you should be. It's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. You're going to say the wrong thing. It's going to be embarrassing, whatever. But like, don't let that get in the way, or don't let that be the speed bump that sends you back into not doing anything. It's fine. But like, you have to sort of persist forward. It's not okay to just be like, oh, this got kind of uncomfortable. So it's hard. Uncomfortable is where we need to be right now. And then something I got from Monique Melton, she's, I think, Mo Motivate on Twitter and Instagram. She's an anti-racism educator. She had this great point of just make it your daily practice. If you're reading book, read 10 pages a day, read a chapter a day. But like, insert anti-racism education into your daily practice. That maybe that's with your coffee in the morning, then maybe that's before you go to bed. And like, as that starts to happen, and as you start to become more educated, start to implement that into your daily life. Like, if you see something, say something. If you want it done, do it. Like, it's going to take those actions. And I think some people probably feel overwhelmed. Like, we have this whole system based on racism, but like, it is actually just each little action every time that also contributes to this system. It's not just these laws that can be changed only in November or whatever it is. Like, it's little things every single day that you can do this anti-racism work and to be a part of the solution and not the problem. So I think just committing to those things, you're going to be uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could stay here talking to you forever, but I know we're going to move on. Thank you both. Deep bow of gratitude. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
That was Leah McGowan-Hare with Megan Rapinoe and Janelle Monae. Their conversation serves as a strong reminder that while our country has made progress, the work it takes to achieve equality never stops. As Janelle put it, freedom is not free. It's something you fight for every day. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back here soon on Blazing Trails.
Blazing Trails is a production of Salesforce, a customer relationship management solution committed to helping you deliver the personalized experiences customers want, so they'll keep coming back again and again. Salesforce, bringing companies and customers together. Visit salesforce.com/learn more.